From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch, your beacon of truth, helping you navigate today's complex issues. Thanks for joining me as we go beyond the headlines, engaging with national leaders and newsmakers to uncover the truth that matters most to you and your family. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
I made it clear that if they go into Rafah, they haven't gone into Rafah yet. If they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah, to deal with the cities, to deal with that problem.
That was President Joe Biden on CNN last night, finally admitting that he is holding up the much-needed munitions to Israel. Now, this is part of the $95 billion military aid package approved by Congress last week, which probably would not have passed the House had the aid for Israel not been included. We'll talk with Carolyn Glick, senior contributing editor of Jewish News Syndicate. And the day draws nigh.
There are those who are trying to prevent the agreement by claiming falsely it will cede sovereignty to WHO and give it the power to impose mask or vaccine mandates or lockdowns on countries. These claims, as you know, are completely and utterly false. The agreement will give WHO no such powers.
I didn't know that. I actually have read it, and it looks like it's the opposite. That was Secretary General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus, lamenting the growing opposition to the WHO's global power grab scheduled to be voted on in less than a month at the 77th World Health Assembly in Geneva. Now, Senate Republicans are calling on President Biden to withdraw the U.S. from the improperly advanced proposals. We're going to get the latest from Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson in just a moment. He is leading the opposition in the Senate. Now, here's something that you can try at home. Take over your local library board and get rid of the pornographic LGBTQ indoctrination material that is aimed at indoctrinating your children.
All the noise surrounding this issue, there is one indisputable fact that this present library board has used our taxpayer funds to purchase books and other materials that promote adults committing sex acts with children.
That was St. Tammany Parish resident Chad Cochran. We're going to be joined by a member of the St. Tammany Council, David Kugel, from my home state of Louisiana. He spearheaded this effort. He'll be here later. And as university campuses continue to be petri dishes for anti-Semitic activity, Christians are countering it with actions of support for Israel and the Jewish people. Tommy Waller, who is the founder of the Hoyalel, a ministry of on the hills of Samaria in Israel, will be joining us later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, with the 77th World Health Assembly approaching just, actually within a month, all 49 members of the United States Senate, of the Republicans of that Senate, recently called on President Biden to reject any pandemic-related treaty or agreement considered at the Assembly. Now, the Republican senators noted that WHO's abysmal performance throughout COVID, through the COVID pandemic, should be a factor. And they called attention to the constitutional requirement that two-thirds of the Senate must ratify any foreign treaty. Now, with the World Health Assembly just a little more than 3 weeks away, what's next in this effort to prevent the WHO and their global power grab? Joining me now with an update is Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who has been leading this effort. He serves on the Senate Budget Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Well, Tony, good to be with you.
So the World Health Assembly begins May the 27th, 2 weeks from Monday. You've been outspoken about this issue for months, trying to raise awareness. You sent a letter with all of the Republicans to the president, calling on them to withdraw the U.S. from any consideration of two measures that are being looked at there and voted upon. Explain that to our viewers and listeners.
Well, first of all, I was very glad that all my Republican colleagues joined in that letter. Earlier, I had led an effort on an amendment vote to deem any agreement that Biden enters into with the World Health Organization a treaty. Every Republican senator except for the one sponsor of the bill didn't want that as a poison pill amendment. voted in favor of that. So unfortunately, it became a partisan issue. But all our letter asked for is, you know, as you say, our preference would be just withdraw from these negotiations. You're aware of the fact that by its own rules, the WHO would have to present the language of any amendments, any treaty that they are going to vote on 4 months before they vote on it. They don't have this thing done. They're supposedly going to be voting this thing in a couple of weeks, so they'd be violating their own rules. But even if Biden agrees to this for the United States, what we're saying is he should deem that a treaty and should come before the United States Senate for discussion, for debate, and a vote on ratification. The presidents are abusing their authority in terms of entering these agreements, calling them executive agreements, when they're clearly really fall under the guidelines of what treaties should be. So again, the American people understand what our president is getting America involved in.
We've been talking about this for months. You've been on the program multiple times talking about there's two issues here, two international agreements. One is this a treaty. It's a treaty. It's what it is. It's a binding as a treaty. The other are amendments to the international health regulations. And as you pointed out, by their own rules, which you state in your letter, Article 55 requires that they provide this to member states 4 months in advance. What's the recourse if they don't do that? Can that be challenged in court? What can be done?
Well, what should be done is the nations that are participating in this say, we haven't had time to review it. We're not going to vote on it. We're not going to pass this. I think the good news is they don't have an agreement yet. I think enough people, their eyes are being opened to this. They're wary of it. And so hopefully just enough nations will just agree that this is not a good idea and just end this process for good.
So you think there is a possibility that this could be derailed because of growing awareness and the fact that the WHO has not operated according to their own set guidelines?
Yes. I mean, I give a fair amount of credit to people like you and the Sovereignty Coalition. This is happening around the world. People are awakening to the dangers of global governance to you know, a new world order. They're certainly aware of the fact that our response to COVID, engineered certainly in part by the World Health Organization, let's face it, is the World Health Organization that gave cover to China. So we still don't know exactly. We don't have the hard evidence in terms of where the coronavirus actually initiated. I think it probably was man-made, probably from a lab in Wuhan. But again, there's corruption. The Chinese exert way too much influence on the World Health Organization. Why would we want Chinese influence dictating American actions or other nations' actions as well? So, you know, I'm hopeful that awareness will just defeat this thing.
It's a really good point that you bring out, Senator, about China's connection here and the performance of WHO during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was dismal. Why do we expect them to do any differently by giving them more power, but yet we've seen no reform on their behalf?
You know, particularly when we're talking about individuals' own personal health autonomy. That's what's at stake here. I think our freedoms were taken from us. I'm afraid too many of our fellow citizens willingly gave up their freedom, their own health autonomy, for a very false sense of security. I hope we've learned the lesson. It didn't work. America, we're 4% of the world's population. We apparently experienced 16% of the world deaths. I mean, I don't know how you can take a look at that and not call it a complete miserable failure. And now what we're starting to see of the people that push these things, you know, push the vaccines, denied vaccine injuries, now all of a sudden they're saying, well, no, you know, there people were injured by the vaccine. So I'm calling those limited hangouts. They're going to admit to just enough so they don't look completely ridiculous, but not enough to make sure that we hold them fully accountable. That's what we need to do.
Now, Senator Johnson, I know you just have a few minutes. You got to head out. But I want to ask you this question. The Biden administration has been working on this treaty, apparently keeping it under the radar. Has the administration responded to anything that the Republicans in the Senate have inquired about as it pertains to this treaty or to the international health regulations that are being amended?
No. They also haven't responded to my more than 60 oversight letters on various aspects of our response to COVID, including the last 50 pages of Fauci's emails that remain redacted. We've looked at about 350 pages. I mean, the redacted versions are incriminating enough about his cover-up over the origin of his funding of the Wuhan lab. But we can't even get the last 50 pages, even though Congress is not subjected to the redaction. So, no, this administration is completely opaque. They haven't been transparent at all. And that includes their negotiations on the WHO treaty and agreements.
The American people need to hear that. That is what the Senate and what the House, what Congress does. It provides oversight. That's the check and balance. I mean, this is stuff we learned in basic civics. That is the role of Congress, but yet you're being blocked. I mean, this is outrageous.
Yeah, we unfortunately, Congress has allowed its oversight responsibilities and authority to atrophy over the years. Most members of Congress just want to vote benefits, spend more money, don't want to do the hard work of investigations. As a result, administrations realize that they really don't have to respond to congressional inquiries so they can keep the information from the American public. That's the main issue here. We are the American people's representatives. We're the ones that get the information on their behalf. They right. have every right to know these things. The administration is not, respecting that right to know.
Right. I mean, that's what a representative form of government's all about. Final question for you, Senator Ron Johnson. What can our listeners and viewers do at this point?
Call up their Democrat representatives. Republicans are on board. But there's a bill in the House, companion to mine, that would deem this a treaty. But we need to get Democrat senators on board. We need to get Democrat House members on board, create that same kind of pressure so this becomes a bipartisan effort. There should be nothing partisan about this whatsoever. There's no partisan advantage here. We just want to maintain our own health autonomy and our national sovereignty.
All right. Senator Ron Johnson, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for leading the effort.
God bless.
Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. All right, so here's an action step. It'll lead you to a few things that you can do. But text WHO to 67742. That's WHO to 67742, and it'll take you to a link. You can communicate with your members of Congress. You can also support the bill. House Resolution 1425, No WHO Pandemic Preparedness Treaty Without Senate Approval Act. That's the measure that can be advanced. But here's the thing that you can do, everybody can do, is, there are going to be clips of this interview I just did with Senator Johnson. Send those around, whether it's on X or Facebook. Talk about these things. Let your friends know. As you heard him say, we've been able to, we're on course to possibly derail this just by raising awareness. That public awareness has forced the WHO to kind of suppress the news and the information surrounding these amendments that are being done to the international health regulations, as well as this treaty that they're negotiating. That's why they haven't put out the information, which they're required to do by their own rules. So raise awareness. And as he said, be sure and contact especially Democratic members of Congress, because the Republicans are on board. They understand what this is. This is an attack on your rights. It's an attack on national sovereignty. All right, after the break, I'll highlight an example of concerned Christians getting involved in the political process to bring about change at the local level. It's something you can actually try at home. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us again. If you want to weigh in on this power grab by the World Health Organization, text WHO to 67742. That's WHO to 67742. All right, for nearly 2 years, a controversy has raged in St. Tammany Parish, that's in my home state of Louisiana, when sexually explicit books that included dozens of books teaching gay, lesbian, and transgender ideologies were discovered to be readily available to minors throughout the library. Now, parents, they didn't shrink back. They didn't go silent. They actually formed an organization to push back. This includes some local residents fed up with their local library who decided to run for the parish council, which has oversight of the library, to specifically address this issue. And one of those local parish councilman David Kugel, and he joins me now. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is a Christian family program, so without getting too graphic, what were some of the books that were paid for with taxpayer money and put on the shelves of libraries for kids?
Exactly. So, I mean, and that's part of what, and when I discuss this with people, because you have a lot of different opinions about these types of things. And I say, look, the taxpayers have a right to have a say in how their money is spent. And the origin of this is back, I think it was summer of 2022 or so. And I got involved around October. And I started, because, you know, I follow these national political trends. And I noticed all these same types of books, sexually explicit books showing sexual acts, encouraging signing up on sex apps, all these types of things were just being put in schools and in the minors section of various libraries. And not surprisingly, it started happening in St. Tammany Parish, Louisiana, where the fourth largest parish in the state, were very conservative. 13 of 14 members of the Parish Republican Council are actually Republicans. And as you know, Tony, we have parishes instead of counties, but that's pretty much the equivalent. So I got involved at that point, and we started, you know, just basically saying, look, you should represent community standards here. We don't want our money spent on this stuff. It's to the extreme to where it couldn't even, people were getting embarrassed with it being mentioned in public. It was just so vulgar. And one of the local news stations out of New Orleans said that they could not even show or discuss what was in some of these books because it couldn't be shown on TV, which should kind of give you an idea. And then at some point later, because there was a Facebook page by some people affiliated with me, and they ended up getting taken down because they were just showing samples from these materials, and they kept saying these violate community standards. I mean, this should be pretty simple that this is not appropriate. And what we started seeing is we started doing public records requests for emails between the library and, as you know, the American Library Association. And we started seeing that a lot of this was intentional. And the way that it was happening is they were basically saw that their role as kind of challenging community standards instead of respecting them. And so we started demanding, like, no, you need to adhere to community standards. You need to serve the public. And in my case, I just saw that my particular council member would not, you know, represent us. And at some point, I decided to run against them, and I'm here now.
Well, I commend you for your effort, David. And I just, for the sake of our viewers and listeners, I've known you since you were high school or in college. Back when I was in the legislature, you would come to the legislature with my seatmate, A.G. Crow. So you've kind of worked with A.G. over the years and seen how the political process works. I guess there's a message here for other parents who see these types of things happening in their communities, their children being exposed to it. And it's not just their children. We should be concerned about what all children are being exposed to, ultimately, because they become citizens of the communities we live in. But sometimes it appears overwhelming to get involved and to make a difference. But you ran for the council, you got on the council, you saw the way to utilize the law to then bring about a change in the library system there in St. Tammany Parish. What would you say to other parents who are concerned about what they see happening in their communities?
Well, one of the reasons, you know, I do follow social media lots, like especially X, Twitter, now X, which I appreciate, you know, allowing more free speech. And I follow some of these just conservative influencers. And some of them, you know, I'll give a shout out to Mr. Jesse Kelly, who has a lot of interesting commentary. He said, you need to focus on getting on school boards and focus on getting in these local bodies. And because it's so easy to just focus what's happening in D.C. And, you know, I'm sure you know that yourself. And where we really have an impact is these local elections. And in my case, I saw that, you know, I want to run for the parish council because that was what if basically we appoint the library board, which controls the library. And at some point, and as you can see, we were sworn in January. And I don't want to take all the credit for this at all, because we had a majority of the council vote for. So the Republican Party of St. Tammany Parish gave a list of recommended nominees, and a majority of the council voted for 100% of that list. And that's basically where we are today. So the impression is they're probably more conservative, but they were recommended by the Republican Party. They all got eight votes or more. And, you know, now we feel that we've, you know, addressed what the people were concerned about. And I want to encourage parents to run for local offices. I mean, it's at where my first part of this was, like, I kept going to some of these meetings and I just saw that I really wasn't like making the impact I wanted. I said, okay, then I'm just going to run for office. And, you know, the issue resonated with people. And, of course, there's a lot of other issues as well, you know.
Right.
Because normally at these parish council levels, and you'll probably know this, you know, again, being a resident from Louisiana, we don't focus on social issues and we don't screen for social issues. That's in the legislature. That's in Congress. But the library issue has changed that. And now it's people are going to ask, where are you on the social issues? Not just drainage, not just, you know, zoning. But where are you in the social issues, like how, in our case, our $14 million library system functions?
Yeah. These issues have become an issue at every level now because of the way the left has pushed this indoctrination. David Kugel, thanks so much for joining us. And again, congratulations. Job well done.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. And folks, you can do this at home. All right. If you'd like to find out more about What do you need to do to run for a school board? We've got resources for you. FRCaction.org. All right. We're going to help you out. All right. Don't go anywhere. More Washington Watch coming up on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about some ways that you can support Israel. Well, we see these pro-Hamas protests going on college campuses. We see the Biden administration backing away from Israel. It's critical now that we stand with them. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. And let me once again invite you to join us on May the 19th for our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. You can find out more about this Sunday by simply texting Israel to 67742. And we're calling on churches just to take time to pray for Israel. Now, you've heard me say on this program many, many times the importance of Christians standing with and praying for Israel. The commands of the Bible, frankly, are not optional. And America has been blessed, I believe, by its support for Israel. In fact, I was talking with Ambassador David Friedman this week, and I was talking with him about how I believe America, our future is intertwined with that of Israel because As we stand and protect Israel, I believe the Lord will continue to give us the ability to protect them. If we walk away from them like this administration wants to, I think we're going to be in trouble. Well, some friends of ours in Israel are coming to the United States. In fact, they live on the hills of Samaria with a ministry, and they are coming to the United States for a conference that they are hosting on May the 20th in Nashville. And this is another opportunity for you to participate in a tangible way to show your support for Israel as they fight against those who want to destroy them. Here to share more about this opportunity is the president and founder of Hayovel, Tommy Waller. Tommy, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on. What a privilege.
Absolutely. I would actually rather be over there with you in your area, because I've been there before. Beautiful there in the hills of Samaria. Tell us about the Israel Summit and why this event is so important.
You know, we've been working here this month 20 years, and we talked about this earlier, that the issue surrounding Israel is very complex. There's a conflict, and most Christians don't really understand the conflict when they come here. They go to places, they get off a bus and walk where Jesus walked. But 2,000 years later, there's still a conflict over this land, and we have been engaged in it. We didn't come here intending to get engaged in a political conflict, but as farmers from Tennessee, we begin to help farmers here in Judea and Samaria to plant vineyards and to plant olive groves and different things, and got involved in actually loving these people, appreciating their zeal and their zealousness to come back to the land. To actually right now, Tony, I'm in the place where Abraham left his father's house and came here and heard a commandment, a covenant, right, that was spoken by God right here. So this is the land I'm going to give your descendants. And we're still today fighting over that particular covenant.
Genesis chapter 12, those who bless you will be blessed. Yes. I mean, that's right there in Shechem. You're right there in that area. So you actually, I want to get to the conference, but you bring folks over to Israel, to Samaria, which is called the West Bank, which is about 80%, 70, 80% of all the Bible stories we read about the accounts in Scripture happened right where you're at. You bring them over there to help work the vineyards in the fields.
We do. And actually, that's what the prophet said. If you look at the Scriptures, most all the time, almost every time in the account, when it talks about the Jews returning, Israel returning to the land, it mentions right after that they'll plant vineyards, specifically in the mountains of Israel. And when I saw those vineyards here, I asked the vineyard owners, hey, can I help? And so we've been helping them. We bring people from all over the world. Now, I think over 30 nations have been involved, thousands upon thousands of volunteers have come over here, really to put feet to their faith. That's what we're doing.
I've actually planted some vines there on the hills. Yeah. In fact, award-winning wine has been produced from the grapes there, which the BDS movement has blocked. I mean, you talk about the politics. The politics are constantly attacking this area, and this is the area that the Biden administration and others want to give up in the two-state solution.
Again, unfortunately, there's a misunderstanding, a lack of understanding on this issue. What really brings peace, and I think Tony and I and all your listeners understand, peace is actually going to come in the way God ordained and God said it would come, and that is the Jews returning to this land and establishing it. And we are seeing very sincere Jewish people returning back, rebuilding the ruined places, planting the vineyards. And to me, this is the course of peace.
Right.
The biblical way.
Very quickly, Tommy, almost out of time, got about 40 seconds. Yeah. The conference, yeah, May the 20th. Who's going to be there? How can people find out more?
Yeah, we have a lot of people. What we've honed in on is just the people that most of these people live here in Judea and Samaria. People that advocate, people that you may be familiar with, Carolyn Glick, MK Ohad Tal. These are people that have been giving and advocating for and over this conflict, giving understanding to the people of the world concerning this conflict and why it's the best way. Why is it why it is the way? We're also going to be showing the world premiere of Ambassador Friedman's new film that's coming out called One Jewish State.
Oh,
it's going to be shown at the event for the first time. These are things that I think are world-changing, and these are going to change the way every leader, every Christian leader, every pastor, I believe, needs to be part of what we're doing in Nashville.
All
it's
right.
in the buckle of the Bible Belt, and I you know, pray you're able to join us.
All right, Tommy, great to see you. Maybe we'll see you in Nashville. We'll encourage folks to attend. All right, folks, stick around. We're coming back with more after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. Check out the website, tonyperkins.com. And there is a link there to the conference starting on May the 20th that Tommy Waller was just talking about, the Israel guys. You can find out more, follow the links over there. And I would encourage you, if you can, to go. We need to do everything we can to show our support for Israel. And that includes joining with us on Sunday, May the 19th, for a Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. I hope your church is participating. I'm just asking you to take a few minutes to pray for Israel. Pray for the peace of Israel. All right? Find out more about it. Text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Our word for today comes from the very last verse of the last chapter of Judges. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. The issue was actually not that they needed to select a king. God was to be their ruler. He had established the rules for the nation and promised to provide and guide them. And he did, initially, when the people walked in obedience. But as the parents failed to fulfill their responsibilities to teach the next generation who God was, what he had done for them and what he expected from them, guess what? They forgot God. They forgot his word and his ways. And everyone did what was right in his own eyes. This spiritual compromise led to moral corruption, which brought about cultural and political chaos as evidenced by a civil war. No nation is immune to this. We see this unfolding in our nation today. As it has always been, the answer is to voluntarily turn to the Lord in repentance, who is full of mercy and ready to forgive. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text BIBLE to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Well, in a television interview last night, representing a major turning point in U.S.-Israeli relations, President Biden confirmed what many had suspected all week long, that he had placed conditions on American support for Israel in its war against Hamas. Now, according to the president, he will not supply munitions approved by Congress. All right. This was a part of the military aid package approved by Congress, a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and the Pacific. Well, he says he's not going to deliver it if the IDF enters the city of Rafah, where Hamas still maintains multiple battalions of fighters. Now, what does the Biden administration's hold on munitions mean for this special relationship that we have with our ally Israel? Well, joining me now to discuss this and much more is Carolyn Glick. She is a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you as always.
It's always great to be on your program. Thanks so much for having me back, Tony.
So, Carolyn, I'm asking this, as a newspaper headline asked this morning, is this a turning point or is it a breaking point?
It's a very good question. I think it's both. I think it's a breaking point in the sense that, you know, after weeks of building it up, calling for the ouster of Israel's democratically elected Prime Minister Netanyahu, both directly through administration officials and indirectly through Senator Schumer, and undermining Israel diplomatically, whether at the UN Security Council or by greenlighting proceedings against Israeli leaders at the International Criminal Court at The Hague, or in the public square in the United States by disseminating claims that are false allegations of Israel that were deliberately undermining the humanitarian situation in Gaza, which was never true, and it is further from the truth than ever today. The Biden administration has been escalating all the time its hostility towards Israel since October 7th. And so this is the point of no return, where they're saying, okay, we are actually going to deny you the means to achieve your war aim of defeating Hamas, eradicating Hamas as a military force and as a regime, and preventing it from receding in the future. We're going to deny you the means to achieve all of those goals, whether by forcing you to accept a seaport in Gaza that's going to block your ability to maintain a maritime blockade of the Gaza coast so that they'll be able to rearm, not take control of the international border with Egypt, but rather allow us to do it for you as if we can trust the Biden administration. So that is the policy on a technical level, and on a military level, it's saying we're going to deny you offensive weaponry. And this has been going on for many months. Already beginning in January, we started getting first reports that the Biden administration was slow walking munitions to Israel, including specifically ordnance for our aircraft and 155 millimeter artillery shells and tank shells. So these are the basic tools of war that the Biden administration and the Obama administration convinced Israel we didn't have to produce at home, whether our air ordnance or our basic munitions, and that the United States would be the steady supplier of all of these things. And really, since January, they've been undermining that supply. And we have to remember as well that in January of 2023, the Biden administration emptied Israel's stores of our emergency arms and transferred all of them to Ukraine. So our cupboard was bare on October 7th, 2023, when we were invaded. And then they replenished those stores, but they have been slow walking additional armaments ever since January. And now this has become official government policy, as announced by President Biden on CNN.
Carolyn, I want to underscore something you said. The United States, going all the way back to Obama, it said, look, we're going to take care of this. You don't need to manufacture this yourselves. We'll be your supply line. And now just doing like communist China did to us with PPE and the COVID COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, they're slow walking. They're squeezing us. So what's the ultimate goal here by the Biden administration? Now, I know I've spoken to the House Speaker. He's irate. I spoke to Lindsey Graham. He's irate because this is not what the Republicans were told. They were told, look, we need this supplemental $95 billion package, includes Ukraine, Israel, and Indo-Pacific. It wouldn't have happened if Israel had not been in the mix.
No, they double-crossed Speaker Johnson and the House and Senate Republicans. They lied to them. I think it was clear all along because the minute that Biden presented the bill and made Israeli aid for Israel contingent on aid for Ukraine, knowing full well that the Republicans opposed the aid for Ukraine, he was already setting it up for months and months of delay on the House side because you couldn't get a sufficient number of Republicans willing to swallow that package and support, you know, tens of billions of dollars for Ukraine again. And that was his way of pushing through what he wanted. And he wouldn't budge. Schumer would not budge. He voted against aid to Israel after speaking at a pro-Israel rally at the mall in Washington. And that's just the way the Democrats fly. They didn't want to allow Israel to be a standalone legislation. They forced the Republicans' hand. And Speaker Johnson so wanted to get the aid to Israel that he risked his position in his party in order to push it through with the aid for Ukraine. And then as soon as Biden got what he wanted from the Republicans, specifically for Ukraine, he turned around and he double-crossed them and said, nope, we're not giving Israel what they want. And by the way, the most controversial aspect of that deal was the $1 billion in munitions. And so that was it. And Biden made a separate statement about having approved the $1 billion in munitions. That was, when I listened to it, it was clear to me that that was something that was required in order to get it passed in the House. And then he turned around and walked away from it. And now what he said is we're willing to give Israel the means to intercept incoming projectiles from Iran or from Lebanon or from Gaza, but they may not cause Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, the Houthis, any of them to pay any price for their aggression. All you can do is intercept incoming, but you can't downgrade their power in any way. You cannot take the war to your enemies. They are allowed to attack you, and they will be completely immune from any sort of counter-assault by Israel. That's what the United States wants, and their long-term game is to transform Israel into a weak, totally dependent protectorate of the Democratic Party.
Is there any way for Israel to defeat Hamas without going into Rafah?
No. But a senior diplomatic source said this morning that we have the munitions that we need in order to take Rafah. The problem is the signal that this is sending to Hezbollah and to Iran and to Hamas, which is that if they attack, the United States will not provide Israel with the weapons of war it needs in order to defeat them. And so they can attack Israel with impunity, with longer range missiles and rockets from Lebanon, with additional barrages of ballistic missiles from Iran. And the United States does not have Israel's back. So it's inviting the expansion of the war to other theaters in a major way.
What has been the reaction to this? I know it's relatively new with the president making these comments last night. I mean, we've suspected this all along, but he said it last night. What's the reaction in Israel?
Disgust, a profound sense of betrayal and revulsion at Biden and his administration and his supporters. And concern, you know, how are we going to go forward and concern about what awaits us? Because, you know, Biden already has been enacting an informal international arms embargo against Israel. I don't know if you remember, but early on, the German chancellor came to Israel and met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. And then after a series of conversations between the two leaders, the Germans agreed to sell us tank shells. And the same day that the announcement was made, in fact, like 2 hours after the announcement was made, President Biden was on the phone with Chancellor Scholz and essentially pushing him to cancel the arms sale. So that the administration has been working not only to slow walk munitions from the United States to Israel, but also to block Israel from the international market for arms. To try to undermine us and, again, force a total dependence on the United States. So what we've done in exchange is that, thankfully, finally, we've been massively ramping up our domestic production. Domestic production of everything now. The lines aren't active enough. They're not productive enough to suit all of our needs, but we're moving very quickly towards that goal. It'll take a number of months, but we're doing it. And so increasing supplies are coming from Israeli producers. They've opened up new lines of the Israel military industries in various cities around the country, and they're hiring more and more employees to work the lines. So that's what's happening. So we're just going to have to build it ourselves as quickly as possible. We have to be the arsenal for our own democracy.
I met with the prime minister when I was there about a month ago, and it was clear he's always been very resolute in his leadership, but even in speaking with various citizens and different leaders, this time is different. I wonder, do you think that does the Biden administration understand the existential threat that Israel has right now, and that Israel has there's no plan B? I mean, they have to win. I mean, everyone in that neighborhood wants to see them annihilated. And this week, actually, at the remarks, I want to play a clip because I think this really encapsulates what the Prime Minister said at the Holocaust Remembrance Day. Clip number 4.
80 years ago, in the Holocaust, the Jewish people were totally defenseless against those who sought our destruction. No nation came to our aid. Today, we again confront enemies bent on our destruction. I say to the leaders of the world, no amount of pressure, no decision by any international forum will stop Israel from defending itself.
Now, Carolyn, I don't know him as well as you do, but I believe him.
You should. You should believe him. Look, I mean, I get the sense that aside from ideological rigidity, one of the chief characteristics of the people who are running the U.S. foreign policy under the Biden administration is that they really are extremely shallow. That they think that war is a game or some sort of graduate seminar that you can somehow or another resolve through all kinds of fancy ideas about deterrence and balance of power. And they don't understand war. They've never seen a war. They've never suffered the ravages of war. They've never served in the military. And they don't know what armaments are. They don't know what lethal force is because they've never been anywhere near one. And so I get the impression that aside from everything else, these people just don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're dealing with. They attribute monstrous intentions to good people, and that is the good people of Israel, and they project the goodness of the people on Israel on the monstrous enemies that are fighting us, whether it's Iran, the Iranian regime that seeks our genocide through nuclear weapons and its terror proxy war that has surrounded us on both sides, both its terror proxies that it's armed to the teeth with modern weapons, or whether it's Hamas, and we saw what they did on October 7th, and we understand what it means when they say that they want to kill us all.
Yeah.
That's what it means. And we see it with Hezbollah, the same thing. They absolutely, you know, we found dozens of subterranean tunnels over the years that they've dug into Israel from Lebanon with the goal of infiltrating our villages and capturing and slaughtering our people.
Right.
So this is...
It's not a game, as you said. This is a matter of life and death, and the Israeli people understand that better than any. Carolyn, we're out of time, but I want to thank you, as always, for joining us. Always great to see you.
Great to have to be on your show. And again, God bless you and all of your audiences for supporting Israel. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right. Text Israel to 67742 and join us on May the 18th. All right, folks. Or 19th, I should say. That's all we have time for today. See you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.